I'm John.
And I'm Sherry.
We like home stuff.
We like talking.
And we like the occasional game show sound effect. So welcome to Young House Love Has a Podcast, where we have deep and not so deep conversations about DIY, design, and life at home.
Today we're talking about why John is feeling cursed. We're sharing a decluttering app that we're loving. And we're chatting up Grace Bonney about blogging, design, and what recent realization has her stressing out way less.
Hey there.
Hi.
Why don't you kick things off with our what's new?
Yes, this is very much a joint what's new. The deal is that this week our coloring book is finally out in the world.
And huzzah!
Huzzah! Strike up the band. The reason that's exciting is because it takes a long time for books to be made, and when they finally come out, you're like, wow, it's something that not only I can hold in my hands, but like strangers everywhere can hold in their hands.
Yeah, I think that's the thing I'm most excited about for this book. I mean, it's always exciting, but like this is one where people actually get to, you know, color in and really improve it. I mean, the drawings that this illustrator did are so cool, and it was so fun to work on, but like it's really going to get better when people start adding color to
it. Right. When you add color, that's when I want to see it. And we made up a hashtag. The hashtag is YHL Coloring Book.
The title of the book is Color at Home, but we made the hashtag YHL Coloring Book because we figured that was easiest for everyone.
Yeah, we learned that everybody searches our books that way. Like, nobody searches for Lovable Livable Home, which is our second book. They search for Young House Love Book 2.
Yeah, we should have just named it that.
So this one, everyone's searching Young House Love Coloring Book. So we figured hashtag YHL Coloring Book.
Yeah. But anyways, we want to talk a little bit about what's actually in it, because I feel like we've mentioned it here and there, but it is kind of what you would expect from a home decor coloring book. There are lots of rooms that are just black and white line drawings. There are some spreads, like full big wide shots where you can color everything from the walls and floors and curtains and rugs and accessories and all that stuff. And there's also some like smaller vignettes and things like that.
There's a craft room one I can't wait to see everybody color.
Oh yeah,
because it's like a pegboard full of stuff and I just can't wait to see it. You know, it's much more fun than seeing it black and white. We'll be seeing all the ribbon and the scissors and the pencils all being in color.
And like that was a room we sort of just kind of like made up in our minds, and we sent the illustrator some bits and pieces of items like art we liked or whatever so that she could build it. Actually, many of the pages are rooms that if you follow our blog or have read our books, you might recognize. Like there's rooms from our current house. There's rooms from our last house.
There's some show house throwback.
Room. And like they are familiar, but some of them are a little bit different because when you translate something, as we learned, from what looks pretty in a photo to what actually looks good in a line drawing and will be interesting to color, you might have to add some things. Like a thing that comes to mind is there's a photo of a dining room from someone else's house in Lovable Livable Home that we used as a starting point. But when we started to think about that as a line drawing and without color, we realized that it was looking a little bit bare. So we had the illustrator add some wallpaper. And so there are rooms that kind of like evolved a little bit. So that was a fun process too.
There are also things like collections pages. They're just basically picture a full page of different types of chairs, like a hanging egg chair next to an old English chair, next to a rocking chair, next to a really modern chair. We did allow some people to test color this book, and everyone's telling us that the chair page is the most fun page, which is fun to hear because the collections pages were just sort of a random thing we threw in to be different than the room pages. Basically, we thought of this book, it's not really a workbook because I think that's too lofty. This is not a book that you're going to like go home and spend hours toiling over.
Yeah, ultimately, we know it's mostly be fun.
But I do think that the nice bonus we learned as we were doing it is a little way to work out some ideas, maybe some color schemes you think you'll like, but you color them in the book and you don't like them. Well, it saves you from painting your walls or buying furniture in those colors.
I think it was also fun, like when we were kind of test driving it ourselves, to just like step into a different design style temporarily. Like if you don't normally decorate with lots of color or you lots of high intensity contrast, you can do that on the page just to sort of, I don't know, pretend to be someone else for a moment. And then never actually have to spend any money to test it out in real life.
Yeah, it's like a no commitment decorating test run.
So like we always do with these things, we'll put a link to it in the show notes. Again, it's called Color at Home and it comes out this week and you can grab it pretty much anywhere books are sold.
And it's a lot cheaper than our other two books.
True. Well, and I'll throw in another quick what's new. This is just about me. I seem to be cursed when it comes to triathlons. Because for those of you who listened to an earlier episode where I talked about how I was supposed to run this triathlon earlier in the summer, and
you were supposed to run, swim, and bike this triathlon. Right.
And I did run and bike it, but the swim got canceled because of heavy rains and high water in the river. So I mentioned in that episode how I was working up steam to try a longer distance triathlon. I had only done sprint triathlons. So I had trained all summer to try an Olympic distance one, which was like nearly a mile long swim, which is a lot for me. A 25-mile bike ride, and then a 10K run. And so I almost chickened out like several times. I didn't even sign up till a week before it was supposed to happen. And I was like feeling good. I had practiced. And then what happened?
We all got stomach bugs.
Yep. The entire family. I was actually better by triathlon day, but having not eaten or kept anything down for like 3 days, I felt it was not in my best interest to try to do like a 3 hour long athletic event.
Yeah. Which I think was a good call.
Yes. No, I don't have any regrets or sadness about it because I knew it was smart not to do it. But I guess I...
Bad timing.
Do I get like an effort award? Not even a participation, a registration award?
I'll give you that.
Yeah, because I certainly paid to register, but I didn't run it. I guess maybe the consolation is that I would have been able to do it, as far as I know, based on all my practice.
Yeah, and you so would I've have worked crushed up to that. It. And you will. You'll get to do it.
Yeah, maybe
one
next
day,
year.
Maybe episode 115, we'll be like, John did an Olympic try.
Yeah, exactly. But you know what would make me feel better, Sherry?
What?
Some what's not. Okay, so this is the part where I quiz Sherry. I give her a list in a certain category where most things are real, but one thing is fake. And she has to tell me what's real and what's not. So this week's quiz, Sherry, comes from I was just on Playboy.com.
What?
Can't just slip that in there?
Nope. I'm sure you were there for the reading material.
Well, okay. I was actually there because our friend Jamie Derringer from Design Milk, she was quoted in an article on Playboy and she linked to it.
Got it.
So they had an article entitled The 9 Biggest Mistakes Guys Make When Laying Out a Room.
Feel free to go to Playboy to read about this stuff all right, the time.
Exactly. I feel a little bit weird already about putting this in the show notes.
Oh, yeah. Here's that Playboy article I was talking
Maybe
about.
I'll just put the title and you all can search it. Whatever that does to your cookies and everything, that's on you. So anyways, I pulled out 5 things from this list that experts that Playboy interviewed said are missing from most guys' rooms.
And are these just like bachelor pads or are these like...
They sort of assume the bachelor things. It's mistakes guys make when laying out a room. And so they had 9 things, but they often were pointing to things that guys were missing. And so these are 5 things that guys are missing in their rooms. One of them is fake. The right rug.
Okay, that's possible.
Proper art.
That's also possible.
A floor lamp.
I believe that one more than all the other ones.
Color on the walls.
I would argue some rooms don't need color on the walls.
And accessories.
I mean, all of these are true that if they're missing and a guy forgets them, or a girl for that matter, if anyone forgets these, there's something that's devoid. I would say that you made up color on the walls.
You, my dear, are correct.
Oh! Because I don't think every house, whether it's a guy or a girl's or anyone's, needs bright color on the walls. It might just be cool with white or like a light neutral.
Yeah, and actually in this article, the experts recommend the opposite of color on the walls. As they put it, the mistake guys are making is you've gone to the dark side. They say that men tend to buy dark furniture and use dark paint, but if you're living in tight quarters, these choices make the whole space seem smaller and man-cave-ish. That's actually a quote from Jamie Derringer. She says, try to go lighter with your color choices, especially if you live in a small space.
That makes sense.
Well, I think actually a lot of this article is general tips that we actually use a lot when we're talking about things that might take a space from feeling unfinished to a more finished, thoughtful space, because some of the real things that I listed that they said are missing, like the proper size rug, we talk about that a lot.
Right.
Not just posters pinned up, but things that are actually like maybe in frames. I like this quote. It says, add a headboard and you're really starting to give off that grown-ass man vibe that women find appealing.
Ooh, he has a headboard. I'm going to marry him.
So if you guys want to see the full list and read all of the tips, I will put a link to it on the show notes page at younghouselove.com/podcast. Thanks to our friend Jamie Derringer for possibly getting me in trouble. Shall we switch gears from Design Milk to Design Sponge?
Oh, look at that segue. Like it.
Yeah, I just thought of that.
It's really fun to call Grace Bonnie. She's super smart and she knows about lots of things. Blogging, design, she's an author, just like lots of fun stuff. So we're going to give her a call.
Hello.
Hi, Grace.
How are you both doing?
We're good. How are you?
Very well, thank you. I'm so excited to talk.
Well, there's lots we wanted to talk to you about, Grace. First, I think we should talk about Design Sponge because it's been 12 years, right?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
I know. You're like the grandmother of blogging.
Exactly.
The cute younger grandma who goes by like Mimi. obviously blogging has changed a lot in 12 years. So I wondered if you could talk a little bit about the changes you've seen and maybe one that surprised you most about where it went or the turns it took.
Sure. I mean, I honestly can't say that anything in the blog world doesn't surprise me anymore because, I mean, you guys know it's constantly changing. I mean, it almost feels like from day to day that it's changing, and both the expectations of what we're expected to do as bloggers or content creators of some sort, the things we need to do every day to sort of stay relevant and interesting, the bar is just constantly higher and higher. So I don't know what to be surprised about anymore, except that I honestly didn't ever think there would be a day where like Handmade and Etsy and that kind of community was ever such a household name. Not because I didn't want it to be, but just because it seemed so inherently indie. And so to now see like huge big box stores doing collections with people who, you know, are making something tiny and by hand, like in a studio in the middle of the country, is just, it's wonderful. And I never could have anticipated that. So it gives me a lot of hope for blogging and sort of the indie community in general, that like all of these things people are making and talking about are relevant to a much broader audience. And the internet has been sort of the conduit through which we can all connect those maybe small local grassroots ideas to a much bigger platform.
What do you think is a place you see blogging going? Like, what do you think are changes on the horizon or where it's going to take us? Because I know we're all sort of have question marks above our heads, but I would love to get your take on it.
I mean, can I be blunt and say nowhere?
Oh, yeah.
I don't know that I see blogs going a lot further, at least in the way that they exist now. And I feel the way about blogs that I feel about print, which is I don't think any of these platforms will completely disappear. And there are always exceptions to rules. But I really do feel like the modern and especially younger consumer of particularly lifestyle-based content expects that content to be everywhere and in so many different forms. So I think they want you to be on Snapchat and they want you to be relatable and fun and like this sort of temporary version of everything. Then they also do have interest in reading longer form pieces that are more personal and that kind of get more in depth. So bloggers kind of have to be everywhere. So I think the blog is no longer the king in any way. And it's definitely not the place everybody comes first. I just kind of have evolved to, instead of thinking of Design Sponge as a blog, but to think of it as kind of this voice that exists across different platforms. And to be totally honest, I remember the ad half of my team going to a conference, I think it was a Google for Publishers conference in San Francisco years ago, and them coming back and saying, hey, Google told us we should stop thinking of the blog as the central place. And I was like, what? That's ridiculous.
What,
like,
does Google know?
Yeah. Who was I? Good Lord. And I remember just thinking that was so silly, and it could not have been more spot on. And I definitely struggle with finding ways to create content that feels real and relatable on all of those platforms. But I kind of enjoy the challenge now. I definitely fought it for a few years, but now I like the idea that we're not just stuck on the blog and that we can cultivate different audiences with very different points of view. You know, Instagram can be this place to just be about images and not have to be about anything super in depth, and for Twitter to be a place where I can be a bit more political, and for the site to be a place where we have these long form essays and sort of personal moments that you just can't quite get across on social media in the same way. So I kind of like it.
What's one of the hardest lessons you've had to learn through all this?
First thing that comes to mind is that I think I really sort of hindered my business for a long time by laboring under the very, very false assumption that if I was like best friends with everybody who worked on my team and was like very lenient about things, that that would somehow make everyone happier. And in the long term, it kind of created this culture of a lack of boundaries. And I think personal things got in the way a lot. And I totally created that because I was so nervous to be direct and straightforward about what I needed. Because when you get to work with people that you really admire or people who are your friends, those lines are so sticky and so sort of malleable. And I just made a lot of mistakes assuming that by giving people a lot of leeway, I was letting them kind of live their best life at Design Sponge. And instead, I had to kind of clean house and start over and kind of hire a new team of people who could come in with this new set of boundaries and guidelines that I would stick to. And it's a different culture at Design Sponge. It definitely is not kind of this like super, super, super like in-person family structure we used to have before, but it still feels like a family, just a lot more functional one.
Well, you're talking to two people who don't enjoy managing people at all.
If you couldn't tell from our business model.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people in particular look at bloggers that have been around for a while and assume that we all are like rolling in money and that I think that even when you scale and you grow your company and hire people, it does lead to maybe greater ad revenue or greater projects on the side, but then you divide up all that revenue amongst your team members. And so the sort of company revenue rises, but everyone's individual levels still kind of stay the same. And at least that's been kind of our experience. You know, they're all growing pains that are part of any business. But I kind of like when people, like you're saying, like yourselves, like if you choose that that's not something you enjoy doing, it's totally okay to not want to do that. And if managing a team isn't something you enjoy, then no one should have to manage a team.
And there may come a time in my life where I want to take on that sort of career challenge. But right now, no. Yeah. I'm having enough trouble managing
my
children.
We're managing our kids. We do have a team. It's a team of two and they never listen to us.
I was just thinking the same thing. Yeah, I think when you have kids, especially more than one, like you're already managing a team full time.
We were curious, you know, you made the move from Brooklyn where you started Design Sponge further upstate into the Hudson River Valley. I was wondering how that has affected your personal taste.
I think there's so many ways the Hudson Valley has affected my design sense, but I think mostly it's simplified things. I think that living in the city, there's just so much visual inspiration, and I was always collecting little pieces of things, whether it was like cool concert posters or little bits of branding or like matchbooks from restaurants. And so I just had a lot of stuff, which is weird because I had a smaller amount of space, but it just kind of felt like all of that visual noise felt appropriate in a setting where everything was so loud and crowded and cramped. And then we got here and we have more space, but we really kind of took our time decorating and doing things slowly and being okay with having emptier rooms and not having art on all the walls and not having all the rugs yet. And, you know, there are moments when I've felt that pressure to kind of like just fill the space as quickly as possible. But we've really resisted that. And it's kind of given us this nice sense of just letting the house be itself. And that sounds a little like cheesy and zen, but I think when you live in a really old house like we do, there's something beautiful about just letting the bones of the house be the star. And I've just kind of learned to embrace that and let those weird quirks and curves kind of have their own moments just as much as anything else I would buy for decorating. So I would say it's definitely made me much more of a minimalist.
I think you're right. You're like a little bird in New York City. You pick up all the treasures. Like I saved random postcards. I had like a whole bunch of random like Snapple tops. You know, like you're just like a junk collector. This was a different era. I'm sure you did not collect Snapple caps.
Thank goodness you evolved from this.
I have really grown, John.
Sorry, I need another moment to appreciate
that. Snapple caps. I love your house and I catch glimpses of it mostly on Instagram and your dogs. I love peeking in on you, as creepy as that sounds. And I wondered if you had like a favorite decorating decision you made in your current house.
When we moved in, our sort of kitchen dining room area, it is an addition to the house that was built probably 20 years ago. And it's just basically one big open room, but it has sort of two huge walls of windows. And that space is what sold the house for us. And it's where we spend most of our time. But when we moved in, the only seating was sort of a dining table and chairs. And I just kept imagining how nice it would be to like read a book and lay in the window and then open all those up in the summer. And so the first thing we did was hire a woodworker locally to create just like a huge L-shaped banquette. And that's like not rocket science, and it's not going to make the cover of like Elle Decor or anything, but that simple project. And then getting like my favorite sort of like a ticking stripe fabric to go on top of the cushion. It's just, it immediately created this place to spend time. And it also just is a giant stripe statement, which is my favorite design statement ever. So that huge banquette has become where like people come and take naps and where our pets lay in the sun. And it's beautiful, but it's also just super functional. And that's become a new requirement for me. Like I invest far less in things that are aesthetic statements and far more in things that will serve a very practical purpose for us.
Whenever I see it on Instagram with like the dog sitting on it, I'm always like, that's the life right there.
It really is. Like the very simple things are all I need right now.
So let's talk about your new book, In the Company of Women, comes out October 4th. And you sort of profile and interview over 100 female makers, artists, and entrepreneurs. And I love it because it's very different from your first book, which was more like sort of home design and DIY focused. And I just wondered how you landed on this concept since it's so different.
Well, it's a funny story. So we have the same publisher, so you understand what it's like working with artists. And they're so supportive of me. I've always felt so safe there. And so when I did it, I signed a contract for my second book, which was intended to be a huge DIY encyclopedia, like massive 400-page book of ideas. And then I kind of delayed it a bit and I was dragging my feet and I couldn't really figure out what was wrong. And I kept just blaming it on like a million other things and being too busy. And then I had a real moment with myself and just thought, I don't think you actually want to do this book. And as soon as I started admitting that out loud, it just became abundantly clear that I shouldn't put my name on something that my whole heart isn't in. So I thought about giving the money back. And then before I did, Julia was like, why don't you think about if there's something else you would want to write about? And I had actually pitched a business book earlier, but this was kind of before books like Girl Boss and Bossy Pants came out. And that like sort of girl powery moment wasn't happening yet. And so my idea just seemed not interesting to anybody. So I kind of thought about, well, why don't I pitch the same thing, but with a slightly different angle, really kind of focusing on inclusivity. And so Julia helped me write a one-page pitch, and I sent it off to Leah at Artisan and said, I know I owe you a book in 2 months, and I haven't written it, so I am prepared to give you my advance back, but here's a Hail Mary pass. Like, this is what I would love to do. This is where my heart is. And I think I heard back from her the next day, and that whole 24 hours was terrifying. And she wrote me back, and she was like, I love it. Let's do it. But you have the same deadline. So if you can turn this in 2 months, you can do what you want to do. And I love a challenge. And so I made a list of women. We invited everybody. We got all of our yeses in a row. We lined up photographers. We bought a ton of plane tickets. And then we just hit the road. And it was like the most intense but fun summer camp ever.
I was impressed with how beautiful the book was. I mean, not that I don't expect you and Design Sponge to give the world beautiful things, but, you know, since this is you interviewing and profiling all these artists and makers, that wasn't necessarily my expectation for it. But the photography and getting these kind of like sneak peeks into these workspaces was, for me, just as enjoyable as the text.
Thank you. It's funny, the book originally was kind of envisioned as more of an interiors book, like it was going to very much be about these spaces. And then as the list of women kind of came to be and was realized, we realized not everyone has like a beautiful, you know, perfectly curated workspace, and they shouldn't have to. And I didn't want them to not be included because they work from like a second bedroom and don't have the space to make this like showcase studio. And so we did try to focus on including extra photographs of spaces that were particularly beautiful, but I liked having a mix in there.
There's a page of your book I already ripped out and framed. So it's a picture on a painted white brick wall of a frame. And in the frame, it says, design is everything. Everything is design, in a scripty font. And I ripped it right out, put that in a frame. So within my frame is this brick wall with a smaller frame. It's so meta.
I think that was Tina from Tatley and Swiss Smith. I think that was her studio called Friends Work Here. I think all of our attention spans are so much shorter from working online and reading online. So I really wanted people to be able to be drawn in by the photos as much as they were the text. So that balance was really important to me.
I guess speaking of some of the names in the book, because I think there's plenty of folks in there that listeners will recognize, you know, Genevieve Gorder, Justina Blakeney, Joy Cho from Oh Joy, and also plenty of names that they'll probably be meeting for the first time.
Yeah.
Is there your number one top advice that you took away from making this book?
Absolutely, which was a big sort of 180 for me and sort of how I saw work, which is that there is no such thing as work-life balance. And I have spent 2 years of my life like dedicating podcasts and posts the concept of work-life balance and how you achieve it. And that if you just, you know, manage the right things in the right way, you can get there. And then I talked to all these women, you know, some of whom have been working in their businesses or their, you know, creative practices for 40 plus years. And they all were like, oh, wait, you think that's still a thing? Like, no, that doesn't exist. We're all just, it's a seesaw. Like, you can never really get it to stay perfectly in the middle unless you're not moving. And I think for most of us, the real goal is growth and sort of forward momentum. And for that to happen, there's always a give and take. And the second it kind of clicked in my head and I thought, oh, it's not that I'm doing something wrong or that I haven't figured something out. It's just that that doesn't actually exist. And it allowed me to cut myself some slack, relax a hell of a lot, and then kind of realize like, oh, we're all still making mistakes and we're all having days where we feel like we didn't give our family enough attention or we didn't give our work family enough attention. And we're all human and nothing is ever going to be perfect and still. And kind of realizing that people who were in their 80s still felt that just made me feel so much more relaxed, because I do have moments where I think like, man, what am I doing wrong that I still feel like I can't quite stay ahead of where I need to be, either as a boss or financially or with content. And I kept relaying that information to other women as I interviewed them, and everyone, there was like an audible just sigh from so many people who were like, oh, great. Well, you know, if Eileen Fisher is still figuring that out and she's run a successful, profitable business for so long, like, than those of us who've only been in the game for a few years, like, feel a lot better about not being able to have figured that out already. So that concept being smashed to pieces was a very cathartic thing.
Yeah, I agree with you. The term work-life balance is tricky. Some days you're winning and some days you're not, but you're working towards winning again. And the way you lose is when you don't keep shifting and you just do the same thing over and over again because it's like cement boots and you're sinking and sinking and sinking.
Absolutely.
Well, Grace, as always, it's refreshing to hear from you and you've made us smarter.
I don't know about that, but it's always a pleasure to talk to both of you. Thanks so much for having me on the show.
Oh, our pleasure, Grace. And we will talk again soon, hopefully.
Sounds good.
Good luck with your book tour.
Thanks. Bye, guys.
I love talking to her. I just think now I'm going to think about it. It's all going to bounce around in my head for a while.
It's like simmer for a little while.
That's right. Yeah. It's simmering.
Well, while it's simmering, I will make sure that we get links up in our show notes at younghouselove.com/podcast so you can check out Design Sponge, her website, if you haven't been there yet for some reason, and her new book, In the Company of Women, and also her first book, Design Sponge at Home, which is also great.
Okay, but it's time for We're Digging.
Can you believe we don't have a We're Digging sound yet?
I know. I feel like we need one.
And next episode.
No, right now. So I will begin because I'm digging something very specific and it's very affordable, but it's something I have purchased many months ago. They have stood the test of time and now I feel confident in recommending them.
Pet store crickets.
No, I never bought a pet store cricket ever. Our children like to look at them when we're in the pet store, but we don't buy them.
I was close.
You were really close. There are these specific drinking glasses from World Market that I love. And I know that's a weird thing to say, but I feel like drinking glasses are hard to come by because we all have the striped lined IKEA ones, right? Can we all agree?
Yeah.
The whole world has
Hallelujah.
Those, those clear glass IKEA ones. But over time, those start to break and IKEA doesn't sell them anymore. Do you guys know that? My friend went to go get more because she needed like a few of the short ones and a few of the tall ones. And she's like, no, they don't sell them anymore. And I was like, really? My collection is slowly breaking over time too. And now I don't have enough for like if I had eight.
You're sounding
over.
Like they like disintegrate. You're saying like in accidents
no,
they break.
Just over time, you break one in the dishwasher, you stack them, they stick together, one cracks. And so these are my new replacement. And the reason I like them is they're glass cups, but they come in a slight tint of color and they're very thick. I have had 6 of 2 colors, so I have 12 of them. And I've had them for months and I've not broken a single one, which is saying something because I have other thinner glasses that I've broken and they're more decorative. These are for real use. They're chunky glass. I'll put a link to them in the show notes because I know it's weird to describe them, but they're called Carrots Doff glasses, D-O-F. I don't know if I'm saying that right.
Doff.
Doff glasses. But they come in a light pink color, very soft, like almost like a sea glass or a tinted glass. A light green color, same thing, looks like sea glass in the light green. There's also a clear, and there's like a smoke color that's beautiful. I have them in the greenish aloe color and the pink color. The reason I love them is they feel fun, but they also have this faceted pattern and they seem fancy and they're heavy and chunky in your hand. Not so that you can't lift your orange juice to your mouth like, oh, too heavy, but they feel substantial and not like you're going to crack them by cheersing. You know those like really thin glasses when you say cheers, you're afraid you're going to shatter them?
Well, we do use them like in everyday use for, as like juice glasses, but you also use some of them just decoratively.
Yeah, I have them like stacked in pyramids and I'll use them. And I've put the thing about cups, guys, here we go. I'm getting deep. You can use cups for lots of things.
Wow.
These would be really pretty in a bathroom with toothbrushes in them. You can use them on your desk full of pencils or pens. It's just a cute way to corral stuff.
Well, and they're not that expensive either.
No, they're like under $4. And you can buy them actually in sets of 4 online. I'll link to those. And if anyone else has these, tag us at Young House Love. I'd love to see them because I'm sure you use them for more than just drinking. And I like seeing these things out in the wild.
Well, this week I'm digging an app called Paper Karma. It was recommended to us by a friend very strongly. And its purpose is like basically to help you get rid of your unwanted junk mail, like your actual snail mail that comes in your mailbox that you don't want cluttering up your countertop and ending up in the trash. And here's how it works. So basically, you download this app, and when you get a piece of mail, you don't want like a catalog or like coupons or whatever it is. You open up the app, and then within it, you can use your camera to take a picture of the logo or the return address of the piece of mail that you don't want to get anymore. And you just snap a picture and you tell it who it was addressed to, like me, or was it addressed to Sherry, or was it addressed to our neighbor or resident or whatever it is. And then you just hit submit. And the magic elves at Paper Karma like submit a request to the company to take you off their mailing list. It's kind of like, you know how we're so used to unsubscribing from unwanted email electronically? It's kind of like electronic unsubscription to like real life mail.
I like that you think there's little elves.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's elves that do all the work on this.
That's very sweet.
I will say, if you go to download it, there's a couple things. It's not free. It's $2 a month. It's a monthly subscription for it. And so our plan is just to keep subscribed to it for like 2 or 3 months and like really heavily use it to unsubscribe to as many pieces of mail as we can. And then we'll probably cancel our subscription.
Yeah, our friend who is like waxing poetic about it said she basically got her mailbox to like zero except for fun mail. Which sounds really good to me. I mean, I think that's worth $2 a month for a few months. I feel like my cap is like $12. That's my random amount. I feel like this is not worth $25.
So we could use it for 6 months and then you're cutting it off.
Yeah. And then like maybe there's a touch up. Like once a year you do it for 2 months to just make sure you get, you know, if like the alarm companies or all those annoying like insurance companies get you again, then you just cancel them.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely say we've stopped getting some pieces of mail. It does say it takes a few weeks for things to kick in. And there have been some that seem to be persistent and getting through the system, but I'm going to stick to it.
That's right. Stick to your guns.
And there are, you know, when you go in the App Store, you'll see it only has like 2 stars on it, which based on the reviews I read, I think it's mostly because at some point it switched from being free to this subscription cost. A bunch of people are upset, you know, when you take away something free. So I'm hoping that our mailbox will get down to not having very much junk in it because I feel bad throwing that stuff away. I mean, I like literally toss it right into the recycling bin. Although I'll admit, I'm like not totally looking forward to having an empty mailbox.
Oh, will that depress you terribly?
I know. It is kind of like, you know, there's still that old school joy of like, oh, a letter.
Maybe I'll start putting snacks in the mailbox for you.
Oh, thanks.
Right? That'll make you happy. Like, oh, a cupcake. What's that doing here?
Oh, and a squirrel eating it.
That would probably happen. Thanks for listening to Young House Love Has a Podcast. And if you know anyone that you think would enjoy our podcast, we'd really love if you could share it with them.
And if you've got a second, please leave us a rating or review in iTunes to tell us what you're enjoying about the show. They're really easy to do, and they're a big help for keeping these episodes coming each week.
And keep tagging us on social media to tell us what you're doing while you listen. Like Lauren Davidson Betts on Instagram, who took a 15-mile training hike to prepare to hike the Grand Canyon.
Whoa. And check out younghouselove.com/podcast for all the bonus links, photos, and info from this episode. Like a sample page from our coloring book.
And those glass cups I'm obsessed with.
Later.
Bye. Oh, look at that segue.
Yeah,
like it.
Yeah, I just thought of that.
Boing. What's boing? My lips just said that. My brain didn't think that. I just said that.
That's your segue sound effect.
Boing.